I want to call to order a regular meeting for the Grove Beach City Council for Tuesday, February 22nd, 2011. Would you all please rise with us and have a moment of silence for a recent loved one that has passed, and then remain standing for our flag salute. Thank you. Our flag salute, we typically have
the youth come and engage and lead us in our salute, and that's one of our favorite parts of the meeting. Tonight, we are going to be led in our salute by Mariah Peck. Mariah is 8 years old and a third-grade student at Fairgrove Elementary School. She likes math, her teacher, and playing with her friends. She likes collecting shells from the beach and playing in the water with her friends. She also enjoys living on the Central Coast. Mariah would like to be a veterinarian and a nurse when she finishes her education, because she likes pets and wants to help people. Outstanding. She enjoys playing on her Nintendo DS, watching TV, and cleaning her room. And she says that next year her mom is going to sign her up for dance because she thinks Mariah is a great dancer. Well, she'll have to come back and dance for us. I believe that Mariah is accompanied this evening by her parents, brother, baby sister, and I think even a godmother's here, I understand, correct? And her teacher, Mrs. David, is here. So, Mariah, if you will lead us in a salute, we appreciate it.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mariah, you want to come up here? We have something for you, okay? This is a certificate for you. So look over there and put a picture on it. And then have some supplies for you, okay? Shake one of the things and keep doing a great job in school.
Thank you. Thank you.
Shake.
Absolutely.
Roll call.
Here.
Here, thank you, Donna. City Attorney, you want to cover our closed session, session announcement?
Honorable Mayor, Council Members, good evening. Last meeting, the Council met in, actually it was the Improvement Agency that met in closed session on one item, and that was conference with the real property negotiator regarding APN 060211005 and 013. Following the closed session, the Improvement Agency reconvened into open session. There were no reportable actions taken.
Great. Thank you, City Attorney. At this point, the Council will review the order of the agenda as presented by staff and determine if we want to make any changes to the agenda. Do any members of the Council want to change the order of the agenda? If not, I'll accept the motion.
I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay. Next, we will move into our ceremonial calendar. This is item number one on the agenda. And this is a proclamation declaring February 2011 as Grand Jury Awareness Month. Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
Yeah. Why don't I ask the gentleman to come forward? Paul and Bob.
What do you want, sir? Right up, Vice Mayor. Right up to the back, sir.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
All right. On behalf of the City of Grover Beach, this is Grand Jury Awareness Month. Whereas the civil grand jury consists of a panel of 19 citizens that serves the citizens of the County of San Luis Obispo for a one-year period after selection. And whereas the individual grand jurors are selected from a list of 30 volunteer applicants who have been screened and qualified by the judges of the Superior Court with final selection obtained by random drawing. And whereas the jurisdiction of the grand jury extends to all activities of local government within the geographic limits of San Luis Obispo County, and that its primary function is to provide independent oversight into the efficiency, effectiveness, honesty, and impartiality of government. And whereas it is believed that public awareness of the grand jury's function and purpose can be furthered by governmental declarations of awareness. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City of Grover Beach does hereby proclaim February 2011 to be Grand Jury Awareness Month in order to give attention to the grand jury's public reports and to encourage public participation in the grand jury process, signed by Mayor John P. Scholes. And let me comment that Bob Meyer, former city councilman here, is a past member of the grand jury. And Paul Province is currently on the civil grand jury. Gentlemen,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. I'll take that just for a second.
I thought you would.
Anyway, again, my name is Robert Myers. I am a former grand juror for the years 97 and 98. And as a member of this association, I appear every year along with other people to help declare this month, February, Grand Jury Awareness Month for the whole state of California. The association and the governor has set February as the Grand Jury Awareness Month, and it's done, of course, to hope to bring to the general public the virtue and need for a grand juror and to entice grand jurors to come forward and serve on the grand jury. So at this point, I'm going to turn the microphone over to the man that's really here to receive this. He's going to tell you why you ought to be a grand jury and why it's really a great honor and a pleasure to serve as a grand jury.
Paul. Okay.
Thank you. I'm Paul Province. I've been on the grand jury now for about 7 months, and it was a great segue for me to get on something that I hadn't been a part of before, come into a line of work that really wasn't into the government community, so it gives me an opportunity to learn more about government, how it works, and you learn a lot. You meet a lot of nice people, and I just would encourage people. The application process is in place right now. It goes through March 18th, I think, is the filing. You're able to go online on the county website under Superior Court, and you can apply for the grand jury and see what happens. It's a great experience. I'm glad I'm serving, and I thank the City of Grover Beach and the council members for inviting us here to receive this. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. Okay, let's move on to public communications, and this is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council on any items within the jurisdiction of this council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes. Please bear in mind that we will listen to all comments, but we cannot take any action on items presented in public communications because it is not on our agenda. So let me open this up to the public. Is there anyone that would like to address the council during public communications? I do have, looks like, three speaker slips that I'm going to go through, and then I'll give others an opportunity. The first is, and Jennifer, my apologies now, is this Jennifer Joswiak?
Very good. Greetings, Mayor Scholes and members of the City Council. My name is Jennifer Joswiak. I'm here with San Luis Obispo Surfrider. And I'm here to talk to you a little bit today about a water quality problem that we have on the Central Coast. You're probably aware that we've had a lot of high bacteria warnings in our area over the past 5, 6, 7 years. This includes the five cities, specifically Pismo Beach, Silver Shoals, Shell Beach area. And as you probably know, when the county tests, they measure this by fecal coliform and total coliform. I have some numbers to share with you today. In July, we had a fecal coliform rating of 1,616. Now, the EPA limit is 200. Mm-hmm. The state limit is 400, so that's over 1,000. Back in October, we had a few lower ratings, only 573, so just over the threshold. But in November, I have a reading for fecal coliform on November 9th for 1,396. And last week, there was actually an advisory on the 14th and 15th. So we had high bacteria days for 2 or 3 days in a row. Now, as you've probably read in the Tribune, they're attributing a lot of this to the pigeons. Now, I'm trying to figure out how, with days of big swells like we had last week and rain, that pigeons could be responsible for this. What I'd like you to consider is that some of the water quality problems we hear could be related to your wastewater treatment plant in South County. As you may know, the Davison Current is a current that moves from south to north, and your outfall pipe is less than a mile offshore, bringing this to our area. Years ago, our Surf Rider group toured the wastewater treatment plant, and we were really concerned at that time to hear about how the water testing was done. So what I'm asking you today, not just for Surfrider members, but for county residents, tourists, and people like Mariah, who likes to spend her days at the beach in the water, is we would like you to take seriously this recent information about the problems at the wastewater treatment plant. I understand, Mayor Scholes, you do serve on the board of directors, and we would like you to take this problem seriously and know that it is time for an upgrade of all of our wastewater treatment plants to tertiary. We can't afford to be throwing valuable water resources into the ocean. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Joswick. Brad Snook, and Brad will be followed by Jeff, is that Pinack?
Yes. Hi, my name is Brad Snook. Thank you, City Council, for spending some time here. I'm the volunteer coordinator for our county's chapter of the Surf Rider Foundation. Surf Rider Foundation is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the protection and enjoyment of the world's oceans, waves, and beaches for all people through conservation, activism, research, and education. Because local press has noted the chief plant operator at this district's wastewater treatment plant was found to use fraud and deception by state regulators, our chapter has launched an email campaign to measure community concern about malfeasances and to ask community leaders to support a broader investigation. At the core of this issue is whether leadership at the wastewater treatment plant deserves the public's trust. One. Whether plant employee and manager conduct, as overseen by the plant administrator Wallace Group, reflect community values, and whether Wallace Group was serving responsibly during the time the chief plant operator failed to ensure the plant was operating properly and did not update its maintenance manual, keep raw data collected by plant operators, or report disciplinary action to the state. Two, whether Wallace's leadership actually contributed to the poisonous culture at the plant, where one long-time employee is on paid administrative leave and another lawsuit has been brought by an employee that was laid off. The press has dubbed these employees whistleblowers, a label reserved to describe individuals who bring to light poisonous cultures where malfeasances are systematically covered up. Was the Wallace Group involved in a cover-up? Number three, whether public trust could only be restored through an independent, highly transparent investigation. Surfrider Group would like you to take up something for your next agenda in 2 weeks' time. Because of the institutional nature of the malfeasances associated with the water quality monitoring and reporting for the South Slo County Treatment Plant, to which the Wallace Group is tied via its contracted role in monitoring and reporting, we request that the Council consider and adopt a resolution at the next Council meeting calling for investigation into the Wallace Group's involvement into malfeasances, and that the resolution direct Mayor Ferrara or your appointed representative, Mr. Nichols, to support an investigation at the South Slo County CSD to bring forward a similar resolution, or ask Mr. Nichols to bring forward a resolution to the South Slo County CSD Board of Directors on behalf of the City of Grover Beach.
Thank you, Mr. Is that your? It is. Thank you, Mr. Nook. Jeff Pynack.
Hello. Let's see if we can do that a little better. Is that good? Okay. Mayor Scholes and Honorable Board, nice to be here tonight. Thanks so much, for City Council. Water issues are really what I'm here to address tonight, kind of to wrap up the commentary here we're talking about. Most of us here tonight are here for our the things that we are here to talk about. Water is on everybody's radar today and currently. And the reason it's on our radar is because we see what's going on in our aquifers. For example, Slo County aquifers don't hold me to the exact numbers, but as many as 60% are in depletion already and or are very near that depletion level. In other words, danger levels. Aquifers are the underground water that comes up from where our ag and wells draw that water up. Essentially, and I urge everybody to go to our website, which is slo.surfrider.org, and check out our nationally produced video called The Cycle of Insanity. It's about the stupid, inane things we do with our freshwater resources. See, at this point in our lives and at this point in 2011, we can no longer afford to waste fresh water in the way that, and we can no longer afford to do the stupid things we're doing with water. We cannot any longer subsist rationally by wasting 5 million gallons a day of fresh water out an ocean outfall that merely contains it contains nitrates and contains, quotes, fertilizer, essentially, poop. But really, what needs to happen is we need to stop putting the water out the outfall, the two cities that come from Shell Beach and Pismo, our three cities here, Grover, Oceano, and Aurora Grande, which goes to the south plant. I don't know how many of you here are actually know we have one outfall. All the effluent from the sewage plant up in Pismo is piped over to the South County plant, and then it's piped out to the ocean, three-quarters of a mile offshore. And as Jen said, the Davidson Current then carries that effluent straight to the Pismo Pier. I don't want to get into the measurements of how we measure basically the incorrect way that we really measure what can go out that outfall and what the levels of it is. There's no watchdog group. Nobody watches that. It's the honor system. That can no longer be while the outfall still exists. But what I'm really here to talk about is the water banking idea, and it's not a new idea. Water banking is essentially taking the water that we have already, this 5 million gallons a day, which translates out into thousands of acre feet per year. We need to take that fresh water and we need to pipe it back up either through the Rio Grande Valley or back up through Pismo or back up through both, no longer have that water go out that outfall, and take that 5 million gallons a day and bank it back down into our aquifers by building constructed wetlands up in these two areas, or one area, whatever area is good. Doesn't matter where it goes. We can work out an agreement amongst our five cities to share that fresh water that now perks back down and we pull back out again. In other words, what we're talking about here is recycling and reusing this water over and over again, like a bank account. Like you get a paycheck daily from your...
Mr. Panak, I need you to wrap up. I've given you extra time. So I think these are great comments, really.
Yeah. Well, and I will wrap up. And thank you for the little bit of extra time. We're really concerned about this. We hope to be able to build a broad coalition to bring this effort to light to our citizenry and to actually start down the road to getting this to happen. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your comments, all of everyone. We really appreciate you coming forward. The last slip I have, or at least the only slip I have, is John Wallace. Is Mr. Wallace here?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council. I'm John Wallace, and I'm the District Administrator for the Sanitation District. And just want to elaborate on a few of the comments that were made tonight. Obviously, as the board knows and the council here knows, we've had some difficulty at the plant, and we have worked very, very hard to overcome that. And I think your representatives on our board will testify to that fact that we're doing that. I think with respect to the Surfrider Foundation, we really respect the organization. We've worked with that organization before on different projects in different parts of the state, even in Mexico, and we have a good relationship with some of their chapters. But I don't think they have all the facts. And I think that when some of the facts do come out, especially with respect to some of the comments that Brad made, that I think that there will be a different story. And we can't talk about all of that because we're a public agency and we're legally restricted from talking about all of the those items. But when those do come out, we would like to be have a very transparent discussion with the council. We have asked the Surfrider Foundation representatives to meet with us, and we haven't heard back yet whether they would like to do that, but we have asked them to meet with us at the plant for another tour. I understand that they toured there 4 years ago. With respect to sampling, we sample the coliform every day at the plant. And now, at the present time, those tests are being taken by an outside independent laboratory, a certified laboratory. And, for example, in 2010, 365 days in 2010, we had two exceedances. Not very great, but we did have two exceedances out of 365 samples. In terms of what we normally put out in the ocean, Jim talked about 200 and 1,000 and so forth. Our normal outfall produces about less than two parts for our MPN, less than two parts of the fecal coliform. So we're very, very low. Recycling water, we've had four major studies done by that. We've toured Monterey County with the farmers up there. We took our farmers. Recycling study is a very, very strong possibility for us. We've had grants to look at that, but it's very, very expensive to go back to do some of the things that we've talked about here. I would like to invite representatives from the Surfrider Foundation to meet with us to establish, if they would like to, a task force that will look at those things, we'll discuss it openly, and come back to our member agencies to talk about those findings. I think that one of the concluding things is, as you know, we had a spill recently in December. That's not unlike all other public agencies and wastewater treatment plants in the county. Fact is, we have not had a spill in 25 years before December this year. And I think that record is probably better than any other wastewater treatment plant in the county. So we're proud of our record. We're proud of what we do. And I hope that some of the comments can be tempered once that we discuss the facts and have more discussions and with the folks about the operation of the plant. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace. Those are all the loose ups I received. Is there anyone else that would like to address the council during public communication? Mr. No? So let's go Mr. Wysong and then Mr. No.
Tony Wysong, Florida Beach. For those who think I'm losing it, I went down to Santa Barbara Simpson Clinic and talked to a couple doctors I've known for 12 years, and they said I'm normal. They'd probably be the same way I was if they weren't doctors. And I noticed some of the motels down there really have come down. So I don't know why you're trying to put a motel in when I went over to Larry Hank's show that covers the western part of the United States and some of Europe comes to that show. And all the hotels are $49.99, $39.99. So I don't see why you're spending your money wasting it there when you got people going out of business here. And there's a lot of them. And while I was over there, they really said it's bad because the commodity markets are up, the beef market's up. The water over there is having a problem because Congress shut it off for natural habitat. So that means there's going to be a lot of jobs lost over there, and they're not going to get the crops put in because of that water situation. And so that means food prices going up. And gasoline, diesel, it's going to be hard to put the crops in, but yet they should get a good amount of money for the crops. And so the other day, I've been a while. Had a couple come to the house and wanted to know if my wife and I could help. You know, it's sad, this part of the country, for people to have to close their doors on Grand Avenue. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, Mayor Pro Tem said he was an insurance business. So that means you know business. Well, you know, I don't, constructive criticism never hurt anybody. It's a damn truth that hurts. And I don't think you people are businessmen. Because you wouldn't allow this to happen. Now, she's a real estate lady. I don't see how you can show people coming in here, tourists, the beautiful West End, and then drive them down, and here's ruts and holes, and there's a big couple of them up there at Oak Park and Grand River. You know, that's not good business to see these people fold. And you spend all that money down there for the motel. Well, there's one over there that's been vacant for a year. I don't know why you spend the money and want to build more on Grand Avenue. That's not good business. I'm the dumbbell. Yeah, I never went to college. But I tell you, I saw this years ago. And it's not going to go away. There's going to be five more rough years. And that's what they said over there to Larry. We aren't coming out of this. You're not going to do it with unemployment and foreclosures. And people, politicians, who like to spend money. Money hungry, greedy people are not helping the people on Grand Avenue. So I think you need to take a lesson in business. I never did. I just learned the hard way. Experience, common sense, and knowledge.
Mr. Doe.
Greg No from 721 South 7th Street, longtime Grover Beach resident. And I'd like to commend Mayor Scholes and the council members for your role in consolidating of the fire departments. I believe you used good logic, good planning, good foresight. And furthermore, I'd like to request that you go the next step and consolidate the police departments. I believe the same logic that you used for the fire departments applies to the police departments, and I hope that you will make the wise decision, in my estimation, and combine the police departments as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Snow. Is there anyone else that would like to address the council during public communication? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the council. And again, I want to thank everyone who provided comments during public communication this evening. And I know there were several that had discussed the wastewater treatment plant, and we will more than likely have some discussion on that at a future date, depending on what the council majority would like to do on that. We're just as concerned as everyone else with some of the allegations, and so I just will leave it at that because we can't take action tonight. So let's move on our agenda. We have no items under public hearing this evening, which brings me to our consent agenda. And the consent agenda is typically an agenda in which we take items that are typically routine in one motion. So we'll also see if there's any council members who would like to pull any items from consent this evening. I would actually like to pull item number 6.
I would too.
Okay. So if there are no other items being pulled from consent, I'll accept a motion on the remaining items on the consent agenda tonight.
I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda items 2, 3, 4, and 5.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. And our procedures require that if we pull an item from consent, we move it to the end of the agenda. So we will take item 6 up after item number 8. So with that, we're going to move into our regular business. This is item number 7 on the agenda, and this is a report and recommendations regarding alternatives for dispatch services. City Manager Perrault.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. The item tonight, as you've noted, is a report and recommendation regarding alternatives for dispatch services. As the council is well aware, the topic of dispatch services has been discussed for some time. In fact, it was recognized actually prior to the consolidation of the fire district that along with the consolidation of fire services, we needed to find a way to deal with fire dispatch. I think all along the council as well as the oversight committee at that time and today the actually the JPA Joint Powers Authority Board recognizes it's important to resolve the issue as it relates to fire service fire dispatch. Right now fire dispatch, as you're both aware, is being provided by both police departments for the city of Arroyo Grande and the city of Grover Beach. And while it has worked on an interim basis, it still needs to be resolved long term. Having said that, the cities have been working cooperatively along with the Oceano Community Services District Board to address the consolidation of dispatch issue. Actually, before consolidation of the fire district took place, the cities in the community service district retained the services of Dillon Management to services to review joint dispatch opportunities. And while we look at the conclusions that Dillon provided us, and it did not, unfortunately, provide straightforward recommendation, it did provide a base for additional future work. Essentially, what it did do is identify that consolidation could occur, or fire dispatch could be done. Consolidation of dispatch could occur in one of three ways. One was with the city of San Luis Obispo, and also it could be done either at the city of Grover Beach or the city of Arroyo Grande. Consequently, we have looked at several options regarding dispatch, and the purpose of this report is simply to outline what those options are, provide you with a recommendation, staff's recommendation regarding those options, and take direction from the council relative to those recommendations. As I will point out to you, right now the combined dispatch, as you will note in your report, for costs for both Arroyo Grande and the city of Grover Beach is $1,076,956. That's important to keep in mind as we go through these options because it will identify where the cost benefits may exist. San Luis Obispo's proposal, it did take us some time to get that proposal. As you can see from the attachment, we received a final copy of the proposal earlier this month, and you'll note that the cost is significantly greater than we actually anticipated, somewhere in the area of $1.9 million.
while that it has a tremendous facility, it's brand new, plenty of redundancy. Obviously, those are the kinds of costs that we certainly couldn't live with, so that option is really not being recommended. Consolidation at Grover Beach. This option, as noted, would consolidate dispatch services with the dispatch staff located here in Grover Beach. All dispatch staff would become City of Grover Beach employees and would be paid in accordance with the city's salary rates and fringe benefit schedule. Dispatch would be provided through the existing facility. There's plenty of space there, and the equipment is pretty up to date as well. The estimated cost to provide dispatch services from this site would be $922,000 roughly. We estimate that that would be a savings of $150,000. Obviously, that would be roughly $75,000 if you were to split it between the two primary cities. That would give you an idea of what the cost savings would be with that option. Dispatch consolidation could also take place at Rio Grande. With this option, all Grover Beach employees would become City of Rio Grande employees and would be paid in accordance with their salaries and fringe benefit schedules. Dispatch would be provided from their facility, which is currently fairly small, although, as noted in the staff report, the City of Rio Grande is considering options for increasing their police department size, which would also include the dispatch facility. The cost for consolidated services out of Rio Grande is $983. And on the surface, this option would represent a combined savings of just slightly under $100,000. The problem with this option, unfortunately, at least as far as staff is concerned, is all of the cost savings would be eliminated as far as the City of Grover Beach is concerned, because moving that the number of staff to Rio Grande would drop our full employee complement below 50, the number 50 that we've used to maintain our position in the large pool for medical benefits, health benefits. So consequently, what would happen is there would be an additional cost associated with the smaller pool, and that essentially would wipe out any savings we might have. The city, it's also important that we look at, obviously, the consolidation of fire dispatch services itself. You know, if consolidation didn't work of total dispatch, fire could go one place or the other. Depending on where it would go, there could be cost savings involved in terms of that particular agency. In the case of Grover Beach, we would have some cost savings, plus we would also retain the $20,000 that we are currently receiving from Oceano, because we are dealing with the primary dispatch for Oceano. Conversely, it could be offered from Rio Grande. Those same services, obviously, there would be an increased cost to us for providing those services, and also we would lose the $20,000 from OCSD. Then the final option that I just wanted to review, there's a law enforcement consolidation opportunity listed here. In reviewing all of the options for dispatch consolidation, the full consolidation of law enforcement between the two cities was briefly discussed at the staff level. This option would obviously mean the consolidation of dispatch itself. There is a possibility for a greater cost savings through that approach, but I want to caution the council at least that all of the ramifications need to be considered when taking such a step, and that's well beyond the scope of this particular point. That leads me to the recommendation. The recommendation from staff is obviously that you could, because it can be done cost effectively, can be done here, would be the first option as far as staff can see, would be to consolidate at Grover Beach. The second option, should the council wish not to pursue a full consolidation, which would mean Arroyo Grande's buy-in, it would be to consolidate fire here. And I think one of the things that in that ultimately we would need to do is remember that how fire dispatch services are provided is ultimately a JPA decision, and you're a member agency of that JPA. And obviously, a primary concern of wherever you located those services is that the fire services needs are being met. I know that that's a lot of information, but certainly I'm available to answer questions. I believe the chief is here as well, both chiefs, I think. If we have any, we'd be glad to answer your questions at this point.
Thank you, City Manager. And let's just do questions at this time. So any questions to my left?
I have one, actually. Does anyone know what Arroyo Grande's position is on this?
Not at this point. They're actually going to, at this very time, they're also going to be considering all of these various different options.
So just out of curiosity, what if one wanted one place and the other wanted the other place?
That probably gets to a point of negotiation, probably at the JPA level.
Okay. Thank you.
You took my question, but excellent question. Any questions to my right?
Yes, I do.
Councilmember Wright.
I'm confused.
I'm sorry.
Me too. Can you explain to me the difference, full dispatch consolidation versus fire dispatch only?
Well, full dispatch would mean that you would combine the dispatching staffs of the two cities primarily into a single site. Ultimate police and fire, all
police and fire,
right? All consolidated into one location.
But we're really not talking about police at this point in time.
Well, we are, because the direction from the council was to look at full dispatch consolidation as it relates to fire. We had to solve the fire issue, and so the thinking was, while we're dealing with fire, why don't we deal with law enforcement as well? And that's how we got to the list of options.
Okay, so now I'm really confused. But you're saying that the ramifications of... Maybe I'm missing something here. The ramifications of law enforcement dispatch...
Okay. No, you have the floor. Hold on, Kyle.
Okay, so... Do you see where I'm confused here? No, probably not. Okay. The ramifications of a realignment of the services, including law enforcement, you said is beyond the scope of this report and recommendation.
No. Well, and let me clarify.
Okay. I was waiting, but go ahead.
Clarify that.
Thank you.
What I was talking about is as we looked at all of this at the staff level, we also looked at full consolidation of both police departments.
Okay, both
as well.
Police departments.
Right.
So, okay, as opposed to just
right.
just ours and doing the fire dispatch.
Right.
Is that correct?
No.
No.
I'm sorry.
Why don't you back up? What are the options?
Well, number one.
Okay.
The first option would be, of course, San Luis Obispo, which is wiped
right.
off the table.
Right.
Second option would be a full consolidated dispatch option from Grover Beach.
So that just dispatch, not police, not the
departments. Just dispatch for fire.
Fire and police.
And police. Okay.
Right. And then the second option is fully consolidated dispatch, fire and police at Arroyo Grande.
Mm-hmm.
Then more or less the third and fourth option would be fire along with law enforcement at Grover Beach, law enforcement dispatch at Grover Beach, and the opposite of that would be fire along with law enforcement dispatch at Arroyo Grande. Then the final discussion was just laid out there in terms of the opportunity to look at consolidating the whole thing.
Okay.
So under alternative four, only one agency would dispatch for fire.
Yes.
Okay. And then, so let's say if that consolidation of fire dispatch was in Grover Beach, then Arroyo would continue to dispatch for police only, not fire.
Right.
That's
okay.
The distinction.
I understand that.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You're welcome. Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
No questions.
And since my question was asked and answered, I'm going to wait and have comments. So let me open this. I'm going to open this up. This is a business item. We normally don't open these up, but I know that there are a lot of folks here who are interested in this item, so I'm going to open this up to the public. I have two speaker request forms. The first is Steve Lieberman. Took me a while to figure out that last name. And followed by P.J. Ferguson.
Penmanship's never been my strong suit. Good evening, Mayor and Council members and staff, and I've never been one to read notes, so I'm half tempted to throw them away, but thank you for this opportunity to speak. Based on the staff report, I have some comments as well, but let me try to stay on task here. Obviously, I'm Steve Lieberman. I live on Ocean View Avenue in Grover Beach with my wife and two children. Shortly after moving to Grover City, I became a volunteer firefighter and emergency medical technician with the Grover City Fire Department. I also worked as a part-time police fire dispatcher and eventually sat on the city council. When I ran for council, I had a vision for increasing public safety in our community. I wanted every man, woman, and child to know that when they needed help and called 911, skilled personnel would respond to assist them. I am so appreciative of your support in what became the Five Cities Fire Authority. When I was a dispatcher, I took the state-mandated training to do the job. The education that I, along with all the other candidates for police dispatcher, received was heavy on law enforcement and officer safety issues, and unfortunately limited in fire, emergency, medical, hazardous materials, and other topics. It was taught by a law enforcement organization mandated by a state board for police officer standards of training. There's a real need for dedicated and thoroughly trained dispatch personnel to support what has become the second largest municipal fire department in San Luis Obispo County. I understand there's many moving parts to this discussion and these decisions, would ask that all opportunities and all risks be fully vetted, because I don't believe respectfully that they have. I would have had a lot of questions if I were you on the staff report. There's a lot of details that I think need to be identified. A lot of alternatives need to be identified. A statement was made about a remote location dispatch center having the risk of impacting the service level of our community. I don't agree with that statement and would look forward to seeing the substantiating comments. When considering, oh, I better sum up, where this operation should be housed, physical and technical differences exist, but in my opinion, they're not significant. What I believe to be significant is a commitment for your staff to focus on internal and external customer service. As we all know, customer service is about attitude. When I first sat on the council, the community asked us to improve the customer service experience, and much was done to accomplish that goal. But customer service, I'm speaking faster, should be
Mr.
applied
Lieberman,
to internal.
I'll give you some extra time.
I'll breathe then. Customers as well, and the Five Cities Fire Authority is an internal customer. Your policy decisions have been very clear, and I believe our city staff needs to have a paradigm shift to support that level of customer service. When I say city staff, I'm talking about every department within the city. I'm not picking on law enforcement or fire department. I'm saying every employee in the city has a vested interest to carry out the policy decisions that you make. Their actions need to be in line with the goals and policies set forward by this council. That's the job and the career they've chosen, which is to serve this community. Based on the policy decisions you've made and those that you will consider in the future, I expect a high level of care for my wife, my children, my neighbors, and visitors. I ask that you support the Five Cities Fire Authority's request for dedicated fire, EMS, emergency medical services, and hazmat dispatch. But I would also Karen, you asked some great questions. I would have thought that the members of the Five Cities Fire Authority Board, just like every other policy decision that's come down from that organization, would have made a recommendation that you would be entertaining tonight. So I'm a little confused as to the mechanics of how this all went down. I do appreciate everything that's been done, and I hope and I know you'll make the right decision, but I don't feel like you should be pressured to rush to judgment on this one. There's a lot of moving parts. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Lieberman. P.J. Ferguson.
Good evening, P.J. Ferguson. I am the president of Local 4403, representing the career fire personnel within the Five Cities Fire Authority. Good evening. I, too, have some reservations about tonight's staff report and its recommendations. This item was brought before the Five Cities Fire Board last Friday, and had quite a bit of discussion took place regarding this item, an agenda item, and it, too, came to light that several component pieces still need answers. Especially, and I speak tonight specifically regarding the fire side of the dispatch. This is a public safety dispatch center is what we're talking about potentially putting together is a true public safety dispatch center. And how is that going to be staffed? How are they going to be trained? What is the level of oversight and management? If we're going to look at this as a joint center, then there needs to be joint management, joint from the fire side and from law enforcement. And we still have yet to really hear those component pieces of how that's going to come together. We absolutely support a Five Cities Fire Authority dispatch out of one singular location. I think everybody supports that. I mean, we are currently one fire department that are being dispatched out of two completely different dispatch centers. Our Station 61 is dispatched out of the Aurora Grandy Station, and our Station 68 and our Station 61 are dispatched out of here, out of the Grover Beach dispatch system. And that just, it doesn't work. But we all also want to make sure that we're not in such a rush to just combine that as well. There's some hazards in that, as we've seen and as have been discussed at the fire board itself. We support Chief Hubert and Chief Heath and their decisions and their ability to lead us to what that next decision should be made. But again, I would ask that you take a look, ask some more questions, look at more of a staff report, and maybe develop something more substantial to come back to the fire board with, or to come back to our fire and EMS and law enforcement leadership with. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ferguson. Is there anyone else who would like to address this? Please come forward. State your name and city of residence for the record.
Honorable Mayor and City Council, I'm John Bewick, Operations Lieutenant, Grover Beach Police Department, and a resident of Grover Beach, 325 North 10th Street. I have some things I'd like you to ponder here, but like Steve, I've got to break out my glasses so I can read them. Starts here.
It's more than the glasses.
Tonight before council are a number of alternatives regarding joint dispatch services. I understand that one of these goals is to provide effective dispatch services for the fire department from a sole agency. I also believe a secondary goal is to provide that dispatch service with the best solution that provides the most cost-effective means. I do not believe that providing just fire dispatch at one of the agencies meets either of those goals. Joint consolidation of dispatch service does. In the staff report is an alternative to look at full police and dispatch consolidation with Aurora Grandy. I have seen this issue come up a number of times in the past, but I feel now is the time to look at it again. Given the city's financial crisis, the vacancies that currently exist in both departments, the potential increase of police services, the potential long-term savings to both cities, and the estimated savings of $800,000 to $1.3 million per year, I strongly encourage the City Council to support the full police and dispatch consolidation alternative and direct staff to work in partnership with the City of Aurora Grandy to put together a proposal to bring back for further consolidation and consideration. Got to move my glasses here a little bit. A full police and dispatch consolidation will meet and exceed the needs of the dispatching services for the fire department. Your leadership tonight may save the city from further cuts in essential services and set the example for other cities to follow. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bewick. Just come forward.
Uh,
Mr. Mayor, the city council members, and city staff, I'm Tim Miller, a sergeant with the Grover Beach Police Department. I speak to you tonight as the president of the Grover Beach Police Officers Association, and before you tonight is a report on joint services or dispatch services. One of the alternatives in the report, as been pointed out, briefly discusses full police consolidation. On behalf of the Grover Beach Police Officers Association, I ask you to consider directing city staff to further study the option of full police consolidation services. This is not an easy request we make because we are all very proud city employees, but we feel that due to the economic challenges that we continue to face, that all options should be thoroughly researched and seriously considered. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Is there anyone else? Okay, I'm going to close this to the public and bring it back to the council. So, let me just add a little context around this as a representative on the Five Cities Fire Authority, and I know that that board had discussed all of the alternatives, and we all agree that primary goal is definitely to provide efficient, professional, and safe dispatch services to the Five Cities Fire Authority, and that we need more information to really decide what that looks like. I also wanted to share that the fire chief was actually given direction to evaluate and determine what improvements it would take to meet that primary goal. So I wanted to give you that information. Around the discussion about law enforcement consolidation, and I'm sure Steve will recall probably back in 2004, 2005, there was Grover Beach initiated some discussion around a complete consolidation of law enforcement, and actually I think foot the bill at that time and tried to take a leadership role in that, and we didn't get very far, but the time, it may be time to keep all options open, but that's certainly going to depend on the city of Rio Grande and others and how they come to the table, and if there's a sincere and honest discussion, then we keep the option on the table. But tonight we are being asked to make a decision or at least give some direction around the issue of dispatch and consolidation of that. So with that, I want to open this up and let's have some discussion. I know there's a lot of questions and a lot of comments, and there's been some great comments here tonight. So who wants to start?
I'll start.
Okay, Councilmember Peterson.
I have to tell you that I'm incredibly impressed at the turnout tonight. I appreciate all of you being here, and more than ever, I'm conscious of what a talented and positive group you are, and I really appreciate your openness to this, because these aren't easy times and they're not easy decisions, and the fire department has done such an excellent job in pulling together the team that they have and the joint effort that they have, and I think it makes sense. It's common sense, and they've done such a good job at it. I'd like to see them take a shot at it to the next stage. So I do want to hear from the Five Cities Fire Board. I do want to hear from the police departments, and I think that as someone said, several component pieces need consideration. And I think that there are some precedents already. Obviously, it's been done, and it's been done exceptionally well by all of you. And you've got a great track record for making it work. And also, we're centrally located in Grover Beach. We're right between Oceano and Arroyo Grande, so that makes sense. I know location isn't everything, but in this case, I think we've got a good facility for it. And then also, we already have a track record in Grover Beach. We're already doing it, at least with the fire services for Oceano and Grover Beach. And so, personally, I'm very positive about this. I'm incredibly encouraged by the members of both departments, and would like to see us move in that direction and take a lot of input from the people involved, because they know how to do it and they've done it well.
Okay, Councilmember Monar.
I agree a lot with what Debbie has said. We have to consider that this is a several-step process, and I think tonight we can't make a lot of decision towards our ultimate goal. I do agree that we do have to consolidate our dispatch to both fire and police. It makes sense that if somebody's going to call 911, they're going to have that call go to just one place. To split it up really will cause a lot of problems and might be very redundant. So definitely a combination of the police and the fire dispatch is very important and will ultimately lead to perhaps the consolidation of the police departments. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Bright, did you want, or Mayor Pro Tem Nichols, are you ready?
Sure. I definitely think we need more information before we can make a decision. I really appreciate the input we've had from the public this evening on this issue. It appears that the majority of the support is for a full consolidation of dispatch services, and I agree with that if we can put it together. The consolidation of the fire department into the five cities fire authority has been quite successful so far, so I think we have found out that we can do this. It is possible. I believe we've had a number of inquiries from other communities using what we have done as a model, which I think speaks to how successful our program has been. So I agree with what appears to be the rest of the council's majority here, that we need to get some more information and we need to strive towards full consolidation of dispatch services.
Councilmember Bright.
Thank you. I don't really have much more to add other than I think that really, well, as you can see, I was confused. I think I definitely need more information. But truly, I think we need to look at what's best for the citizens that are served by the JPA. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that having one central dispatch is really going to be the way of the future for us. So I am in agreement that we certainly need more information, and I would I'd like for that to happen as soon as possible. We don't want to drag our feet, I don't think, but we also do need buy-in from the other members of the JPA. So I think that's really where we need to go. Thank you.
Okay. So let me just kind of out myself, because Councilmember Monar, you asked a critical question, and I'm going to get to a series of questions that I have in some direction. But when I run the scenario through and I say to myself, City of Rio Grande is taking this issue up tonight, we're taking the item up, and what happens if everyone decides to become very territorial, you know, and says my facility is better than yours and it becomes an impasse, then it's a discussion at the Five Cities Fire Authority, and there are three members on that authority, that board, a representative from Grover, a representative from Arroyo, and a representative from Oceano. You can fill in the blanks in there. So,
Oceano.
Let me pull this back. Steve's probably saying I haven't seen him like this in a while. I think there's been some great comments here tonight, and I originally was thinking that as the Five Cities Fire Authority hopefully is heading toward becoming a special district, which may have an authority to generate revenues, because we know it's a huge impact on the general funds of both cities. And there was a presentation to the board on Friday as to what that looked like. What are the series of steps in becoming an independent district with its own authority? Now, we know that's not something that's right around the corner. It's something that's probably, in the most optimistic timelines, 2 years away, 2012. So then it becomes a question of what facility is best for dispatch, or better yet, to try and head off some sort of impasse, is it better for Grover to step out front and say, we will consolidate, we will do fire consolidation or dispatch fire consolidation at Grover in the interim, so that we eliminated it becoming this political football? But now that I've seen some of the comments made here tonight, some of the additional discussion since that Friday meeting, and I know that the professionals are saying that it is best that we do a complete consolidation of police and fire, and the question of whether it's Grover or Arroyo Grande, we still don't know, because we really, tonight, the staff report talks specifically to the issue of fiscal impacts and fiscal impacts to Grover Beach, and I completely understand why staff has presented us a staff report there. You heard me earlier talk about the fire chief being given a task, and I'm hoping it's the chief and his staff from both agencies to do an analysis and determine, you know, really what is the best location for dispatch services, what is the best facility to meet the primary stated objective, which is efficient, professional, and safe dispatch services, and also to have well-trained dispatch support with personnel trained to support fire, EMS, and hazmat. I think Steve had touched on this earlier. So with that, it certainly seems that we could use more information, and I would ask, and maybe we give that direction, and I'm asking the chief and I'm asking the professionals to be objective in the analysis. And that analysis really needs to not only have the fiscal impact component to it, but when you look at both facilities, look at it from a standpoint of operational, you know, look at it from a standpoint of the technological. We know San Luis Obispo is the most modern and most scalable facility, but that is not an option. I think looking at the numbers, it's not an option. So, you know, what is it going to take to enhance or improve the dispatch facilities in both cities? And then come back so that we get that information. So we have the technical, the operational, and any other components with the fiscal, so that we have a complete and thorough analysis before we make a decision. So I think we're all saying we want more information. I will caution everyone, and I think everyone understands, fire consolidation, while it took longer than I think any of us had imagined, compared to trying to consolidate police, it was, I'm not going to say a cakewalk, but it was easy. You had two departments that had trained together, that had worked together, that had come from a culture of working together. And so it was, the timing was right, and I think you've proven that it was the right decision to make. And we know that moving down the road of trying to consolidate law enforcement will have challenges, as we experienced in 2004 and 2005, but it's not something that we close the door on. But I think in the meantime, we still have to resolve dispatch, because we can't say we're fully consolidated on the fire front if we don't have a dispatch center for that really addresses the needs and concerns for the five cities fire authority. So I think at this point, continuing this to a date to allow that analysis by the fire chief and the staff to bring that information back to us, I think would probably be the most prudent action for us to take tonight. Councilmember Monar.
So you're just asking the fire department to give us an analysis, even though we did talk about having joint consolidation for fire and police?
Well, so I guess to clarify, thank you, because the Five Cities Fire Authority tasked the fire chief, but I would think we would want him to be working with police chief as well.
So both of them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Correct. And I saw the city attorney lean forward. No? We're good.
I concur.
I always say it's my job if I get him to squirm a little bit, so.
Do you need a motion, or is this a direction?
Well, I think we probably need to have a motion. What do you think, city attorney? Is that probably cleanest to have a motion?
Well, I think to the extent that you're going to be directing your staff, which would be the chief of police, to work with the authority's staff, who is the fire chief, I think that can either come through a motion or simply a consensus and direction.
Thank you for that clarification.
I would suspect that staff has sufficient direction as a result of the conversation.
Well, let's just make it a formality. So someone wants to
I will do that, because I would like it to be formally on the record. So I will move that we direct our chief of police to work with the chief of the Five Cities Fire Authority to look at the best way to move forward with possible joint dispatch.
Also work with the chief of police from Royal Grande.
And, well, we can't direct And we can direct you to work with him. We can't direct that chief of police.
That's right.
We could ask him.
Okay, hold on, So the maker of the motion, you're okay with that?
I'm okay that we ask him to work with the chief of police.
So before, actually, if there's a second, let me, I want to ask staff a question. And so the motion right now is to a date uncertain. Mm-hmm. But I think I would like to know how long would it take to do an analysis and come back to this board with that information, because I think if we don't put a timeline on this, it'll be 2012 and there'll be three new members sitting on this city council.
Mr. Mayor, would it be possible for me to take just a couple minutes of a break to talk to both chiefs since they're here so I can get an idea of how long it'll take?
Okay, so I know there is a motion on the floor. Do you want to withdraw your motion? And
I'll withdraw it and I can remake it once we have enough information to do it better.
So then we're going to take a 5-minute recess. I'm going to reconvene the Grover Beach City Council meeting for Tuesday, February 22nd, 2011. And we did take a recess to allow the city manager to have a conversation with the police chief and appropriate staff to give us some expectation of when we might see the conclusion of an evaluation or an analysis. City manager.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, based on the direction that we would also want to request the participation of the Rio Grande police chief, at least, we think that we could return with a staff report within 30 to 45 days.
Okay. So you're going to make me do the math.
Well,
so that puts us, let's see.
Mid-April. April or mid-April?
First April. Early first meeting in April.
Okay.
Okay, I'll make that motion then. That so the council would like to direct the chief of police and the city manager to work with staff and the chief of police in Arroyo Grande and the five cities fire authority to consider consolidation of police and fire dispatch and return with a report to the council the first meeting of April.
I would second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. And staff, do you feel like there's adequate direction from our discussion? And if you are not able to meet that date, I would hope that you would inform the council early.
Yes.
Okay, so there is a motion, there's a second. Is there any additional discussion? And I think we'll just do this on a voice vote. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? No. Motion carries. So we'll see you all in April.
I do have to disclose that I won't be here for that meeting.
Oh, okay.
Darn.
Very good.
Sorry.
It's okay. Okay, let's move on to item number 8. This is an appointment of an alternate to the Air Pollution Control District. City Manager Peralta.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, as you'll note in your report, the council reviews the list of committee assignments in order to determine interest in serving annually, and that's done in January. In January, the city was notified, however, that state law has been amended that gives the discretion to each individual city as to whether they want to appoint an alternate to the Air Pollution Control District. When we did our appointments in early January, that notification hadn't been received, and at this point you have the member appointment of Karen Bright to the Air Pollution Control District. So what's being considered tonight is whether you would want to appoint an alternate to Ms. Bright, and if so, who would that be? It's essentially the staff report.
Okay. So who'd like to be the alternate?
I'll do that.
Okay.
Did you want to do it, Phyllis?
No, you said that really quickly. Like,
no, that's okay.
Are there others that would like to volunteer for service? Mm-hmm.
I won't fight you for it. If you want it, you can have it.
Okay.
Well, actually, out of curiosity, what does it entail?
It's a meeting every second month. We start about 9, and we don't know. Sometimes we go till 2. Sometimes we're done by noon. It just depends. It does entail a great deal of homework, as I call it. So definitely you'd need to be up to speed on the issues that are come before the APCD, but very interesting, very important issues, I believe.
Okay.
And they're on a Wednesday, the third Wednesday of every other month.
You can have it, Debbie.
I was just going to say we have a volunteer, so let's just keep moving. So I guess will you need a...
Do I need to leave?
No.
No.
So I do need a motion on this item. So I'm prepared to make that.
I'll make a motion.
Very good.
That we appoint Councilmember Peterson as the alternate to the Air Pollution Control District.
And then this also is to adopt the resolution amending committee assignments for the remainder of 2011, correct?
Thank you.
I'll second that. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Let's move. We have one item that was pulled from consent, and this is item number 6, which is the local street rehabilitation project, which is authorization of award of contract for West Grand Avenue street repairs. Public Works Director and City Engineer Ray. He's still here?
Yes.
To answer questions?
Yes.
Okay. So, Debbie, I think you said you were...
I do. I had one question. There was a comment made under the discussion paragraph, the last paragraph, stating that staff had added language to the city's standard project specifications to address public convenience, access to businesses, and cleanliness of the work areas. And the language, the new language, is based on concerns that were identified during the West Grand Enhancement Project. And I would like to know, I'd like to hear the language that was added.
I'd be happy to. Good evening, Council, Honorable Mayor and City Council. Greg Ray, Public Works Director. I appreciate the question, and I'd be happy to read some of the sections that I edited and perhaps a quick explanation of why. Some of the concerns that came out of the West Grand Avenue project, for example, was that there didn't seem to be enough motivation for the contractor to keep the project schedule moving on time. And one of the sources of motivation is called liquidated damages. Liquidated damages is an estimated cost of the time running over the allotted project time. And it could be a cost to the city, to staff, to the public, or the inconvenience of not having the facility completed. And in this case, on previous projects, that was typically about $100 a day. I increased that to $500 per day. A little bit more motivation to stay on project schedule and to take the project schedule more seriously. And I think $500 a day is a reasonable estimate of the actual cost of going overtime on a project that's on our main street. Another section in the contract, under project appearance, one of the complaints we received regularly with the West Grand project was that project materials, supplies, debris from removal of the project, project equipment, project personnel were scattered throughout the job site. Added in a section that the contractor shall locate equipment and materials to be stored in an area approved by the engineer. It means I'll have some say in discussing where those will go prior to approving the project beginning construction. And stored equipment and materials shall be located away from the fronts and sides of businesses and shall not block access to properties. That's just a small piece of new language added in there. Moving on to the section under public convenience, standard specifications. Generally, you would pay extras for any items that are required specifically for public convenience. For example, traffic control is really there to get traffic through the job site without endangering the workers on the job. That's really the focus of traffic control. Public convenience deals with, and we need that extra level of signage and traffic control so that the public really understands what's going on and what it means to them. So under that section, the contractor is required to erect temporary signs alerting the public to business access, to provide additional signage and traffic control as necessary to provide for convenience of vehicles, bicycles, and pedestrians traveling through the work, and to provide a smooth and unobstructed passageway through the work during any weather delays ordered by the engineer. Again, another problem we had during a weather delay, we ended up being faced with a lane that was excavated, and yet, we needed that lane, and the moving from the regular portion of pavement into that excavated area was a fairly rough transition. So now there's a requirement in this contract to make that transition smooth, and it's delineated how many times that could potentially happen. This contract now requires the contractor to submit for review an official traffic control plan instead of just adhering to standard traffic control practices. Personnel vehicles shall not be parked on any traveled way at any time, and personal vehicles, including any section of roadway closed to public traffic. Cross streets shall not be closed overnight. Goes on and on. Okay. Under two items where the contractor is specifically being paid for coordination now, so it will require him to do it in order to be paid. That's coordination with the city of Grover Beach and coordination with business owners and residents during the project. So those were I just was in the hallway actually there just flagging these really quickly. Those are the ones that immediately came to mind. I think there might be a couple more here, but
thank you.
As you can see, we've taken the experience of West Grand Avenue to heart, and we intend for this project to go much more smoothly.
Okay.
Thank you. That answers my question.
Those are a good question, and thank you for those that added language and clarifying. So I had Councilmember Wright. Go ahead.
You want me?
No,
to
no.
Okay.
You can.
All right. I just what was the engineer's estimate? Did I miss that in the staff report?
I'm not sure if it's in the staff report. It was just over $200,000.
Just over. 201, 202, 210, like what?
I'm trying to remember. I actually did the engineer's estimate myself. I think it was about $217,000.
Okay, thank you. To me, that's very valuable information. I'd just like to know. Anyway, I think you did excellent modifications to that contract. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else?
Yeah.
Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
What was the amount budgeted for this project?
have to look at it, but it's about $230,000. For the construction alone, and then there's additional funds budgeted for construction management and contingencies.
Okay.
But the total amount, I believe, is three. And let me see, it's right here. We budgeted we budgeted $80,000 was transferred basically from the 4th Street project, and $216,000 from the Long Branch project, for a total of $296,000, or approximately $300,000.
Okay, and then, so almost $300,000.
Right. About 10% was estimated for contingency, about 5% for construction management, and a small amount, a couple thousand dollars for testing.
All right. What I'm getting at is the contract price, the low bid for this job, is $174,878, correct?
That's correct.
From SUSE?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, that leaves about $90,000 left over, round figures, right? And you have asked for, if I'm not mistaken, in this, you want contract change orders up to $90,000?
No.
Okay, clue me in.
We're asking for authority to approve contract change orders, should they come up to the amount of contract funds available, less contingency and construction management costs and any testing costs. It gives your staff some ability not to have to come back to council to consider small change orders that may occur to the project.
Okay, well, don't we normally have that specified as 10%? Contract change orders up to 10%?
Normally a contingency amount is allocated of about 10 to 15%, right, in a contract.
And that's is that different in this project? If you look at where did I see it?
Mr. Mayor, if I could, if you take a look at the resolution identifies what those costs are that you're being authorizing, and you'll notice that there's a 10% contingency amount of $17,486.
$488. Okay, what I was looking at is in the second paragraph under discussion. Staff is recommending award of a construction contract to SUSE in the amount of $174,000+. In addition, staff is requesting authorization to approve contract change orders up to the amount allocated funding, less contingencies and project management. And up to the amount of allocated funding, wasn't that the $300,000?
That could be as much as $300,000, and I apologize. It's probably a change in staff here. I'm fairly new with the city. I'm used to asking council for authority to essentially consider contract change orders up to the allocated amount on the total project. And I think perhaps I didn't realize that Grover Beach has maybe a historic practice of just saying, okay, we're asking for a contingency amount and approval to authorize change orders up to that contingency amount. I think I'd be comfortable with either.
Okay.
Well, now that you've stolen my thunder. So that was the essence of my question. It seemed to be that amount was a departure from policy. But thank you for that honest and open response, Greg. We really appreciate that. However, I would like to say that South, and I don't even know if there was any discussion about would it have made sense to do that additional small portion, because I drive South 4th all the time. So, you know, I think I'm okay moving forward with the contract tonight, and maybe at a subsequent meeting, if staff were to say, you know, hey, this project comes in under budget, there's additional $90,000, what are some of the things you're thinking about doing? Because the first thing that popped into my mind was, hey, we've got a project, and I know we're going to be very systematic, we're going to be very methodical and strategic, because you're going to repair those sections that have the structural damage, and then you're going to do an overlay. And it may be either an eastbound lane or westbound lane, depending on where you've identified the deficiency. But right, when I think of, I know we're trying to be prudent and not doing all these improvements from
you know, downtown, because we have a storm drain project that, if we're successful, could come in and rip up some of the streets we're doing. But by the same token, I'm thinking, what happens on West Grand or from Oak Park heading west? There's nothing to stop us from saying, hey, we want to do as much street as we can heading back east beyond the scope of this project. Now, I don't know if 90,000 is going to get you very far, but that's kind of the thought process that I kind of go through. So I don't want to hold up this project. I think we move forward, but I think it looks like there may be some additional funds if the estimate is correct, if the contractor performs, and they don't eat beyond the 10% contingency, because if they do, then we need to be talking to SUSE. So
I have a question.
Yeah.
What you're saying raises another question, which is, if we're talking about laying a fiber optic conduit, I was thinking this was kind of a quick fix-it program. Mm-hmm.
Sort of is.
Should we be looking at the fiber optic while we're at it?
It would seem, if I could, it would seem, and I'll leave this to the engineer, but it's better to, most of these repairs are going to be done in the center of the lane is where most of the dig out will occur.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if that'll actually work for putting the installation of the line, but that's a question that the Public Works Director will have to answer.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a couple things you're looking for in terms of fiber optic conduit opportunities. You know, one is, if you're completely repaving a street, anything that you think you want in there, you might want to get in there now so you don't have to cut up the street and do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, if you're doing an underground project, so you're already opening up trench lines and digging and have that kind of equipment on site, there's another opportunity to cost effectively add fiber optic into your project. This project's, you know, kind of a spot repair project.
Okay.
I don't think it's quite provides you those opportunities that you might see on other projects.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And my comment regarding West Grand Avenue from Oak Park, between Oak Park and 16th, is, if I read this correctly, we're only going to repair the westbound lane, not necessarily. Are you going to do anything on the eastbound side?
You're correct. We would go to the center line on the westbound side for an entire block, and the eastbound side would look pretty much like it does today.
So, I'm thinking that if there is additional monies, why would we not just do westbound and eastbound from Oak Park to 16th if there's additional funds to do that? That's my crazy thought process. Because you're not going to be ripping the street up anytime soon for sewers or fiber optics. So, but the point really is, we want to move forward with the contract tonight and get those done. I believe, what's the expected timeline on completion of the project as presented to us tonight, Craig?
The project allows 30 working days. I've been in contact with SUSE Construction. They want to start soon. I think we're looking at March, April, middle April, in that time frame.
Okay, that's completion, not start.
Completion.
Correct. Completion, okay. So I would say then we want to move forward on that, and then staff to look for opportunities to do additional work on Grand with the additional monies that were budgeted. And I guess if there's not opportunity, then we'll have to decide if we want to try and move those funds back to Long Branch or the other three streets that are on the list, correct? Okay. So I know I've kind of confused this whole discussion. So let's focus just on the resolution that's before us, which is to award the contract to SUSE in the amount of $174,878, and with the 5% construction management cost and a 10% contingency, for combined total cost of $2,001,110. So that's the first action we need to take.
Could I make one more comment?
Sure.
The reason I asked to pull this is because I know we really have, as a council and staff, taken to heart what we've heard.
Change orders up to the amount so indicated in staff report, and authorize the mayor to execute the contract on behalf of the city.
I'll second that.
And that's the amount called out in the resolution?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
Councilman Jordan?
Yes.
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 Yes. And then I would think, I would just want to see if there's consensus from the council to give staff that direction, that to investigate if there are opportunities to build onto this project for the additional monies that have been budgeted for this project.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely.
Very good.
So noted.
Thank you, Mr. Ray. And again, we appreciate your honesty and your forthright, because we know it's it's a hard transition from one city to another. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. So what I'm going to do at this point is I'm going to recess the regular city council meeting, and then because we can come back to our committee reports. We have folks who are here for items that are on the joint city council improvement agency meeting. So I'm going to recess the regular city council meeting, and I'm going to convene and call to order the joint city council improvement agency meeting for Tuesday, February 22nd, 2011. And I'm going to give the city clerk an opportunity. Are you ready? Okay. Roll call.
Here.
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 Here. Thank you, Donna. Public communications. Is there any member of the public that would like to address the council / agency? Seeing that, I'm going to close public communication. And then let's go into City Council Improvement Agency business, and this is item. You know what? I'm going to exercise the prerogative of the chair.
We're going to go to 1A.
Yeah, I'm thinking that the mid-year budget review is something that we can do later, and I know that there are two items here where we have folks who are sitting in the audience that are not on the staff, so. Exercising the prerogative of the chair, I want to go to just improvement agency business, and this is item IA1. This is a discussion of the affordable housing project on South 10th Street and Farrell Road. Mr. Buckingham.
Good evening, Honorable Chairman, board members. Last year, the agency purchased this property at the southwest corner of 10th and Farrell, as you know, with the intent of constructing an affordable housing project. The somewhat triangular-shaped property is zoned R3 and is about 7,000 square feet in size. In January of last year, the agency issued an RFP to solicit proposals for a contractor developer to partner with the city to construct affordable housing units here. In the RFP, we originally set a affordable project of up to 4 units. The RFP also identified the agency would grant 75% of the value of the property and would have a loan for the remaining 25% of the value of the property. And the RFP did identify we would consider other means of subsidizing the development costs, including city payment of city fees. The agency received 4 proposals. They were reviewed by a committee. And ultimately, staff recommended Vernon and Associates. And in the May of 2010, the board accepted staff's recommendation to negotiate an agreement with Mr. Vernon. Mr. Vernon's original proposal assumed the agency would finance the project, eliminating the need for private financing. Mr. Vernon also indicated that the agency financing was not available, that other cost savings or increased revenues, such as an additional unit, may be necessary. So as a result of the agency not having adequate funds to actually finance the project for the developer, Mr. Vernon explored other alternatives. And consequently, he has prepared 2 conceptual site plans, and I just want to run those quickly tonight by you. So the first is a 4-unit site plan. As you can see, in this case, all 4 units have 2-car garages, and you have a couple of guest parking spaces here along Farrell Road in that location. The 4-unit project would require more incentives and concessions than is currently allowed under our Part 49 affordable housing density guest parking spaces, but they do provide additional parking in both particular plans. So the difference with the five-unit project is it is eligible for the under the state affordable housing laws, which allow for less restrictive parking requirements, something that our Part 40 standards do not. So in addition to the parking reductions that are automatically granted under the state law allows for additional incentives or concessions as well if development standards physically preclude development. So consequently, the five-unit project could be approved if findings were made that the non-parking-related incentives granted were necessary because the city's development standards create impediments to the construction of affordable housing. So in your packet, there was also kind of a comparison of the development standards for the four and the five-unit project, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if the council has them specifically about those after the presentation. So that led Mr. Vernon to do some further analysis, and basically he's determined that the five-unit project is necessary for him to proceed to ensure that there's adequate profit and overhead to cover the financial and marketing risks associated with the project. And again, there weren't any financial risks, at least with a loan, that were originally contemplated in his original proposal to the RFP. So where we're at today is Mr. Vernon is proposing the five-unit low-income project subject to basically three terms. First, he would secure a loan for all the construction costs. The San Luis Obispo Housing Trust Fund has expressed interest in providing up to 30% of the loan amount. And I guess to elaborate, you'd have the loan amount, whatever that would be, 60% typically would be done by the private lender. In this case, 30% then would be added as part of the housing trust fund, and then usually 10% requirement is going to be required by the developer as well. So that's how you'd make up the 100% of the loan total. The other two concessions or incentives that Mr. Vernon would be is requesting is that the property be provided at no cost, so no 25% loan that was in the original RFP. And then finally, that the agency would pay $120,000 of the city's building and planning fees. So those are the three terms that Mr. Vernon is requesting in order to make the five-unit project occur. So as a result of the increasing of the number of units to five, the modifying of the terms that were in the RFP, staff is requesting direction from the board prior to proceeding with the formulation of an agreement. Just to go through the next steps, if the board determined that the proposed project meets the agency's goals for an affordable housing project, then staff would prepare a regulatory agreement, and we would be back to you probably at the second meeting in March. Following that, if the board approved it, the project would move forward with the planning process. It would go to the Planning Commission, and as a five-unit project requiring a track map, it would ultimately come to the council for approval. If the board determined that the proposed project and terms are unacceptable, then the selection committee would open discussions with what we would consider the next qualified person that was identified in the RFP process. So, in conclusion, staff's recommending the board provide direction on whether the conceptual five-unit project and proposed financial terms are acceptable. That concludes staff's report.
Thank you. Chair and the board members, if I may just add to the Deputy Executive Director's report. What is before you for a decision is the financial terms and whether or not those that were requested by the responder are acceptable. With regard to the actual project, obviously, as you know, the project is not before you. The approval of the financial terms does not guarantee that the project will be approved or will be go through the entitlement process as proposed. So I just wanted to make sure that that is clear both to the applicant and to the board.
Thank you for that clarification. And before we get into questions and comments, I just feel compelled to add some context around this because it didn't come out in the staff report and it didn't come out in the staff presentation that this proposal is not a proposal by a private developer. This is a city-sponsored project in the sense of the agency acquired this land from the city for the purpose of developing affordable housing
and times have changed from clearly a financial standpoint, but I want us to all understand that this is not a situation where a developer has gone out and bought property and can't make it pencil and decided to come to this council and ask for exceptions. So I just feel compelled to add that extra, and maybe it will help with some of the discussion. So with that, let's have questions. Let me start to my right. Councilmember Wright.
Thank you. Basically,
yes, and that's why we're back before you tonight, because not only has the project increased with an additional unit that more than was envisioned, but now the terms are more clear as well.
Okay. Okay. I have some comments on that, but I'll wait till later. Thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
I have none.
Okay. To my left.
Any questions?
Councilmember Peterson? Yeah.
And I'm sorry I didn't give you a heads up on this one. So it's a numbers one. I hate numbers without warning. My question, though, is this is a redevelopment area. And so we do get a higher return. Correct me if I'm wrong. If we build 5 units than 4 units, would that be right? Do we get a higher return on our property tax dollars?
The property tax would be greater, so there would be a slightly greater increment that would come back to the agency.
Okay. Any idea what that is? Numbers?
It's always, you know, it's 1% of the assessed value ends up being what the tax is based on, and then rather than getting somewhere between 14 and to 17 cents on the dollar, in this case we would get somewhere between 45% and 60% of that dollar.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councilmember Munar, council member / board member.
I just question, in our economic times, how good an idea it would be to go with these concessions. And what our obligation is in terms of providing affordable housing. Since I'm relatively new, can anyone tell me how much we've done in terms of affordable housing for the city? Does anybody know?
Well, the last project that was done was a Habitat for Humanity project, and it was a 4-unit project. And in that case, the agency did acquire the land, and there were city fee subsidies. The agency paid the fees, and I want to say it was in the range of $120,000 for a 4-unit project. So that was the only project, I believe, where the agency has been involved. Perhaps the city manager can think of some others here.
Hold on a second. City manager, you have anything to add to that?
Only that the Habitat for Humanity, the total amount of the dollars was approximately $500,000. Also, the agency is required, as is the city, to produce a certain number of affordable units. I'm sure we're well under that in the agency area.
Okay. City Attorney.
Thank you. Chair, board members, I guess responding to the inquiry from Board Member Molnar, I think our goal is somewhere in the 40s. I think it's 46, 48 units. I think, again, as identified by the Community Development Director, I think we've put about 4 on the ground recently, and I think my tenure here, I could probably remember maybe a total of 6 or 7 affordable units in the last 8-9 years. 20% of the money that is received from the tax increment by the agency has to be set aside and used towards affordable housing.
Yeah, and to add to that, 4 I can think of, you talked about Habitat for Humanity. There was also the project on North 14th Street, in which I believe Mr. Vernon was the owner of that project, and there were some low-income housing that was produced as part of that project. And then around the corner, I believe Gabe Ramirez came in, and he provided some units, and I think it was probably 2. So, and then I think Rick Paul did a project on 7th in Manhattan. So you've got 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, probably 9 or 10, so the city attorney, you're correct. And I think even before that, beyond, was a project on
is it, I can't think of the name, but it's on Farrell and I want to say 11th, 10th, or it's Farrell and 9th, because I think the city, the agency provided a second, and that was done with S&S Homes as a partnership. So the details of that one escaped me.
Okay, so then these particular financial concessions are not unusual then?
They are not unusual, and I would even, and I was going to hold this comment, but what the hey. The Habitat for Humanity project, which the city manager talked about, it's not a true apples-to-apples comparison simply because the improvement agency did not buy the land from the city in order to generate affordable housing. But that said, the improvement agency acquired the land at around $500,000 or plus, correct? How much?
$419,000.
So $419,000. Okay, my math's off a little bit. But I know the next
development agreement and a regulatory agreement is successful, and it's approved by both agencies. So the actual project, the shape of the project, the concessions, the things that would be applicable are really not before you here for your determination. What may be helpful is under state law, whenever five or more affordable projects of five or more affordable units are put on the ground, there are several concessions that are over and beyond what the city concessions provide. There are development incentives and concessions that under state law, basically, the city has no choice but to grant if they're requested.
Okay. Thank you.
So I think at this point it would be very helpful to hear from Mr. Vernon. I know he's in the audience. So I'm going to open this up to the public and allow Mr. Vernon to come forward, and maybe he can clarify for us the request for this change in scope. And then I do have one other request to speak from Jerry Ryu of the Housing Trust Fund. So, Mr. Vernon.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council. Good evening. I'll be real quick. A couple things. This is a real difficult site. It's a complicated project, of course. There's not a lot of them that are actually done in this area. I am familiar with the affordable housing. We've worked through that before on 14th Street. I'll answer a couple quick questions. Councilmember Bright, you had asked if it's different. It's definitely different from when I proposed this back in May of 2010. The big thing that I'm looking at after going through a couple scenarios is that we're thinking that the five-unit project is the better project. Under the state laws, it gives us a little more flexibility with getting the project on the ground and fitting the odd shape and the site constraints that we have and trying to bring forth the best project. As far as the land grant and the paying of fees, that is something that I did actually request in my original proposal, so none of that is actually changing. I'm hoping that this project is going to be the best way to meet the needs of the city. The additional unit, I think it's a good thing to be able to provide as much affordable housing. My budget's extremely tight on this, and having that fifth unit there does actually allow a little bit of flexibility with allowing us to afford to be able to get the site improvements in and such things. The cost of outside financing is a major issue. If I'm not able to get a 0% loan, I have to make sure that I can make some profit or at worst break even. And I'm working on a real tight numbers here to make this work. This is a project that I'm taking on, willing to take on, essentially to keep my guys busy, my employees busy, my supervisors with work and such. So this is it's extremely tight, and I do see that this is the best way to make it work with the five units as opposed to the four. So if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them. Maybe that answered a few.
Okay, why don't you stay there for a sec. Any questions of Mr. Vernon?
Well, I know we're not supposed to get into the design or anything really, but are the units numbered A, are they smaller than B's?
That's
why you only had one, you know, parking spot.
They would be smaller units, and unfortunately, my architect, Leonard Grant. I think he must have gotten stuck at a PISMO council meeting tonight. I do have some information on those, but again, these are extremely rough and they're just kind of conceptual to see how the site would work. However, you are correct. The A units would be smaller, and I cannot remember offhand if there might have been some or one of those that might have been a two-bedroom as opposed to a three. But square footage-wise, yes, they would be smaller.
Okay. And as the city attorney said, that'll...
No, I understand.
Okay. Any other questions?
No.
You have the floor.
Thank you.
No? Okay. So, Mr. Vernon, can you just you touched on it a little bit, but can you clarify from a financing standpoint why five makes better sense than four?
From a financing standpoint, with the four-unit project and the amount that I can sell each unit for is essentially set by the county, and that is... Do you know it offhand?
$162,000.
That's okay.
It's $162,000 for a three-bedroom unit. So, I mean, just some quick mental math shows you that's pretty tight to get some units up, pay for everything, pay my employees.
It's in here.
Does she know that?
Attachment 4, I think.
Is it number 4?
Attachment 4?
Yeah, my hard costs on the site... The site work and the actual structures themselves, based on 1,200 square foot units on average, we're at $642,000 on the hard costs. And then you can look at my numbers are extremely low on the soft costs, again because we're running this as a tight project. But I have a 3% contingency for $19,000. Bank fees are at $36,000. Insurance is running about $19,000. Sales expense $24,000, leaving profit and overhead at 10%, which is $64,000.
Okay, I understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vernon. Jerry Reed. Jerry, good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
Good evening, Mayor Scholes and members of the council. I'm Jerry Ryu, the Executive Director of the San Luis Obispo County Housing Trust Fund. I'm here tonight to talk about a few things. One is to explain more fully how the Housing Trust Fund operates and our ability to provide financing for this type of project, to make some comments about the parking requirements, and also to add a comment about the agency's affordable housing requirements. The Housing Trust Fund is a nonprofit corporation that was formed to fill the gap between what private lenders can provide and what government programs typically provide. So we're in a niche between the two. We make loans. Most of the money that we use for our loans, we borrow from other sources. We get loans from banks, from religious groups, foundations, and such. We also get some grants. So we have to lend our money out, and we're typically charging between 5% and 6% on our loans. In order to operate, about 60% of our operating costs come from the earnings on our loan fund. So it's very important that we cover our costs of borrowing money and then our cost of operating. We take more risk than a bank will. As Bruce mentioned earlier today, we are envisioning that the bank may provide 60% of the financing for a project like this, and we would go up to 90% and finance the difference. That 90%, well, we discussed this project at the board level, and the board felt that because this was a public-private partnership, that a 10% investment by the developer would meet our needs. Typically, we would want higher investment from the private developer. In terms of parking, I think we often forget that in California, garages are used to store our stuff. George Carlin would probably do a whole spiel about the stuff that we keep in our garages. So when you look at an affordable housing project where there's a one-car garage and open parking, there really will probably be more parking because of that those open spaces than if there were all garages, because the garages are frequently not used for parking. And the last comment is that redevelopment agencies are required, under redevelopment law, 15% of all the new housing in a redevelopment project area must be affordable. It's a requirement that many agencies forget about. It's called the inclusionary requirement, and you may want to look at that and run that calculation when you decide on this and future projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ryu. Any questions of Jerry? Okay. Thank you. Okay, if there's no one else that wants to address this item, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the council. And as the staff and city attorney has pointed out, they're seeking direction on whether the conceptual five-unit project and the proposed financial terms are acceptable to the council/board. And that's the only action before us tonight. Subsequent entitlement and involving design of the units, the maps, will go through the normal entitlement process, which is Planning Commission and ultimately to city.
Unit project. The details of how the parking is going to align, whether or not it will be eligible for concessions, whether by state or by our standards, are not before you. Basically, the staff is here to say we went out for a four-unit project. What we have before you is a five-unit project and somewhere in the vicinity of $450,000 in concessions, financial concessions, plus the payment of fees to the city for $120,000 for the development fees. If that deal, for lack of a better word, is acceptable to the board, then you should give that direction to staff and say, go forth and start working on developing the project, putting the DDA together, doing a regulatory agreement, etc. The project will go through the entitlement process. It will have to go to the Planning Commission. It will come before the council because it will be, if it retains its five-unit configuration, it will be a tentative map, which the council will see.
Okay. Then I have another question, if I might.
Sure.
So then, as our city attorney, you don't have any ethical problem with the changing of the terms of the RFP and so on? I'm wondering, should we not negotiate with the other parties that had responded? Because now things have changed.
Well, he doesn't get the answer from an ethical standpoint, but if you want to answer it from a legal standpoint,
feel free. Thank you.
You certainly do have an option to recirculate a proposal. I do not think that legally we are in a place where moving forward with this project would create a liability.
Okay. Very good. So if you're convinced of that, then okay.
Mr. Thank Buckingham. You.
If I can add one thing to answer Board Member Bright's question. The only difference here from this staff person's opinion is the chairman mentioned this is really a city project. And if the board wants a five-unit project, in essence, or willing to let that project continue on, you're in essence saying that you are open to the state density bonuses and incentive concessions, which are going to allow a reduction in parking. So there's no magic here. We're not going to come up with additional parking spaces. So I'm just saying that we moving forward, recognizing in my mind that means that the board is saying moving forward with a five-unit project and going under the state incentives is our direction. Does that make sense?
It sure does to me.
And it's not before us, but I do need to add on to that just so people aren't skewed.
if what's in this staff report is correct, it's R3, parcels of a size that five units would be could be found consistent with general plan. They're not asking for an increase in density.
Correct.
Okay. So let's stop all the discussion over project. Let's get back to if the things that the city attorney said. If we believe that conceptually five units is doable or is something we would like staff to pursue with the selected bidder and the proposed change in the financial terms are acceptable and that we give them direction to move forward in putting together the development disposition agreement and any other legal documents that we need. Mayor Pro Tem.
Now, let me make one comment. We just recently had a presentation by Cuesta College, and the location of this five units is very close to where that campus is going to go in. And I think five units of affordable housing in that location is going to be a tremendous boon. So, obviously, I'm very much in favor of this project.
Okay. Someone want
to I'd like to
make
comment
a
also.
Sure.
I think the project meets a whole lot of our a whole lot of the things that we want to do, and I think now in this economic climate, more than ever, we actually need affordable housing. And Mr. Vernon has put forward an incredibly lean and mean project. Don't know if I've ever seen one quite so lean and mean. And it also has the advantage of putting some people to work in Grover Beach, and I'd like to see him put some more people to work. So as far as I'm concerned, it absolutely meets a whole lot of our objectives, including providing affordable housing and keeping the state happy. And I do want to flag one thing. I really want to flag what Mr. Ryu said about the parking, because it's a point that I think needs to go to the Planning Commission, and we need to consider, too, when we're talking about affordable housing, and that is that by not offering covered parking, we're actually creating more parking, because what folks do in California is store things in their garages other than cars. So if we don't give people a garage, they can't create an extra room out of it, or they can't store in it. They park in the parking places. So we actually have more open parking available. I think that was a fabulous point.
And over trying in the potential of overbuilding lots and neighborhoods, Part 49 was created to try and give people incentives to do four rather than five, and obviously in this case it doesn't work, so that means we've got to go back and reevaluate that because it's not accomplishing clearly what we intended it to do. So I'm done. I'm going to cut myself off, and I'm hoping that we will all cut ourselves off and focus on the task at hand. So is someone prepared to make a motion?
Yeah, I am. I would like to move that we direct staff to proceed with this, that we accept the conceptual five-unit project and the financial terms that have been presented.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any additional discussion, or have we discussed this one enough?
Beat it to death.
So, City Attorney, am I okay with the
voice vote
on this?
Yeah.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Thank you, staff, for your work on this, and Mr. Ryu and Vernon, thank you for your input and comments. Okay, let's move on to item IA2. This is a status report and recommendations regarding the implementation of the Grover Beach Municipal Network. Executive Director Peral.
Yes, Mr. Chair and board members, as you'll recall, in 2010, the agency board, at the request of agency board, the Digital West developed the technology master plan. That technology master plan has been adopted by your body, and it calls for the development of a Grover Beach municipal broadband network. As noted in the plan, the establishment of a joint presence is very important to that plan, the joint or point of presence to the World Wide Web, and with a preferred connection with Pacific Crossing. The network would also require the construction of a network operating center to house the equipment necessary to operate the municipal network. The NOC does not need to be very big, as noted in the report, and can also either be co-located with another facility or operated remotely. The According to the master plan, construction of the network is to be phased. The initial phase would install fiber in the south industrial area of Farrell Road, south of Farrell Road, with later phases to include the installation of fiber along 4th Street and West Grand Avenue. As noted, phasing of the network would depend on the resources available for construction at any given time. And as also has already been noted, the city has been installing conduit along with its public projects, including the South Industrial Sewer Trunk, as well as South 4th Street, and actually in West Grand Avenue when those improvements were put in as well. The design and construction of the initial phase is a goal cited in this year's council agency work program. I also wanted to note that, as the council will recall, we did make a couple of very serious attempts at grant funding for this project at the federal level. Actually, the second time around, with the assistance of Digital West, we made quite a bit of progress, but unfortunately, we did not get the funding we sought. So consequently, we're back here trying to initiate the project with the resources that we currently have on hand. I'm actually recommending that the council authorize Digital West to proceed with the actual design of Phase 1 of the network. Included in the in this proposal are the identification of costs and equipment required to make the network operational. Digital West would also be available to assist with the procurement of the equipment and would provide technical assistance during the network's installation. Digital West's estimate for performing this work is $24,750. As a partner to this, and as just as important as the physical design of the network, is the need to come up with an actual structure, governance structure, an operational structure, an administrational structure, and analyze the network's potential to be financially successful. We're really kind of venturing into a new area, if you will. There are some cities, as Digital West has already pointed out to us, that have a network of sorts, but ours is most likely a little bit different. So staff is recommending the retention of municipal services, muni services, to provide the agency with a two-phased approach. One would actually do the research that's necessary to identify what seems to work successfully for an ongoing basis. They deal with our, at the present time, with our sales tax analysis in trending trending analysis for us. They're also undertaking at the present time another piece of work in a transient occupancy tax audit that the city's requested of our hotel operators. Tonight I have Bob Fasolke with Digital West. He's available to answer those questions. Unfortunately, Fran Mancia was called out of state, actually, so he wasn't able to attend tonight, but I'll try and answer any questions you have that you might have posed for them. That concludes staff's report, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Bob. Any questions of staff? None to my left. To my right. Councilmember Wright.
One, please. Can you just elaborate a bit on the Prop 218 issues?
The Prop 218 issues, we just want to make sure that we stay, if we can, protected against those. If you remember, if you are operating a utility or a fee-based service that is property-related, you're required every time you do a rate adjustment to do a ballot of the property owners. And so it's something that we need to take a very close look at and make sure that we're not tying ourselves into something that might be difficult for us.
Thank you.
Okay. I have four, maybe five questions. The first is, and I'm Bob's here, so timeline for completion. And I'm talking about the work that Digital West is that we're considering hiring Digital West to do, as well as Muni Services, because I didn't see a start and completion date.
Bob, could you answer time frame in terms of actually doing the design, and I'll handle the other side.
I was going to actually answer that with Bob Pasulky, Digital West. To get to the pieces that I've put in my scope of work, I would estimate about 2 quarters to get through that, so probably in the July time frame to wrap up all of my pieces. Keep in mind, some of those are somewhat incremental in the way that they get implemented, so there'll be some things that take place after that, so it won't be 100% completion because I have a commitment to come back and do a health check on the network as it's been installed, do some auditing of the completed system, those kinds of things. But as far as your ability to be able to become fully independent and launching with RFPs and those kinds of things, mid-July time frame.
Okay, great. Well, and don't leave. So do you want to answer the Muni Services?
The Muni Services would be able to complete their work in a similar time frame, I believe.
Okay, so July.
I had one question when you're done.
Okay, very good. So let me, I'm going to continue down. So, Bob, in your proposal, you talk about placing the equipment at Pacific Crossing facility. Yeah. So, what's the rationale for that? And then, secondly, if there is and I know you're talking about identifying sites, so I'm just trying to get a sense of, are you looking at locating something in the Pacific Crossing facility, or if there are opportunities to do something in a different location?
So in the entire process that we've been through, I kind of left that open-ended. It's good that you observed that, because I intentionally didn't tie you into something there. There's a little bit of unclarity on what the total budget can be with this. As you can see from the process, we're still going through some of that. So some of the answer will be tied to what is the available funding at the end of the day. The concept, however, is that either one of those two options allow you to do a go forward regardless of where the funding takes place. At some point, I would like to come back and visit with the council, talk a little bit more, and maybe get some direction from you, because if we go with your own network operations center, obviously there's a larger capital cost associated with that. You could be talking, you know, up to $100,000 of additional expenses. The opposite of that is, as Mayor Scholes points out, is co-locating in Pacific Crossing, which is already a purpose-built building. It's got all the redundant power in it. It's got all the things. And we have had some very good conversations with them. I had a chance to meet with the new CEO of Pacific Crossing when I was in Hawaii last month. I got to share a little side story with you. The conference I was at in Hawaii was all of the trans-Pacific transport carriers from Australia, South America, from all of the rim. They all go to Hawaii and kind of do their deals. Every one of them knew Grover Beach, so I thought you guys would like to know that. You're on the map. So, nevertheless, in talking with the new CEO, he's very excited to share space with you if that's what your choice is. Obviously, that gives you a location, like I said, it's purpose-built, ready to go. Gives you great visibility. And so it's not a bad way to start, and it has a much lower...
In a linear fashion.
It would be my desire to do that in even the first 30 days of this engagement.
Okay.
We've already had the preliminary conversation with Pacific Crossing. They went away tasked with getting back to us with what those lease fees would look like. They gave us some preliminary numbers while we were there. I will tell you the numbers look very good. I think they're very anxious to be a good corporate citizen of the community. And then as far as the building costs are concerned, I've already put some of those numbers together in our first pass, but I think, you know, we need to kind of have a good side-by-side comparison when all that's really been revisited.
That'd be good, because I think that leads into the second question, or the fifth question, wherever I'm at. Regarding the size of the NOC, I think you were calling out 500 to 1,500 square feet, but that's obviously if we're at Pacific Crossing, but if it's at a separate location, then we could consider something larger. I think that was brought out in the Technology Master Plan, correct?
Correct. Again, we'd like to bring all those facts back to you and refresh them all again.
Okay. And then the last question I have, and maybe you and the city manager / executive director can, I'm trying to get my arms around the how Digital West and Muni Services will work in concert. You know, is it that Digital West would put together here's what we believe the infrastructure is that you need, and then hand that off to Muni Services? Or can you just kind of explain?
I'm kind of believing that what we'll probably do is, once the council authorizes us to go forward, I will put them together in a project team so that they will be able to work in concert and accomplish their different parts in interrelated.
Perfect. Good. Okay. Thank you both. Bob and Bob.
I had a question.
Oh, that's right. Too. You did have a question. I'm sorry. Debbie.
Thank you for letting me step in at the 11th hour here. I noted that one of our several of our policies relate to marketing and promoting the municipal network, and that's something that, as far as I'm aware, we haven't really addressed at this point. And I know that, as with you, when we're working entrepreneurially, we're more successful working with the private sector. And so one of the pieces that I'm wondering about is are you able to provide us with a list of people who could come to the party? Because if we've got a party and we make no invitations, nobody's going to come. So I'm wondering if you all have the capacity for providing us the list of the folks who may want to develop here.
To a degree, we've already done that, but mm-hmm. Bruce, can I defer that question to you a little bit? Who do you have in mind already? And we've had a chance to talk about mm-hmm. this a bit, so I don't want to catch you too short there, but let me just be clear. The marketing piece is not included in my current mm-hmm. scope of work. Mm-hmm. I'm more than happy. I mean, my success is your success in this whole thing, so I'm more than happy to help out. I do know of some people that are already have spoken about being interested, and I will be helping, but I think that's really a better question for you.
I would say that the only thing that was identified was the work that Digital West previously did as part of the Technology Master Plan. And they did identify some industries, and they talked to some other directly to some businesses that had some interest. But the reality is that probably needs to be expanded further and a real marketing program be put mm-hmm. out, because if you're going to light this fiber, you're going to need to get the word out, as you're saying.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that's something I'm wondering if the board should be considering tonight is the key piece is who are the people who will come, who will want, who be interested in coming to this party, and how do we reach those people? What media do we use to reach those people? And I think that's a really important piece, and I don't want to, I'll get off my soapbox.
Well, I think there will be opportunity at a future meeting to have that discussion. I think the good thing that's going to come, well, two good things comes out of this is and Bob and Digital West and doing the Technology Master Plan and obviously being plugged into that tech world, they have identified potential businesses that have expressed an interest. So I'm sure he will help with that list. And then I believe Muni Services is going to go and do an inventory right. of users in the existing right. industrial area to identify potential customers right at the gate. So as those pieces start to come together, then we plug it into a marketing, and we'll have people that have been identified who we need to market to. So I think you're good. You're on target with the thought of marketing. I just think tonight we don't have enough information to really push it out there. But we want to do this in very short order. Start that effort exactly.
Yeah, my concern is how do we get that information? And if we're looking for money, the private sector is the best place to go.
No doubt.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay.
And if the council would like, once I've given that report, we can go into questions and answers rather than going through the detailed PowerPoint. We do have slides that, should you have questions, we'll be able to pull those up and address specific questions that way. Essentially, what I'd like to do is, again, remind you that we're in the middle of a two-year budget. This is actually kind of it is the midpoint of the first year. Essentially, as you know, we report to you on a regular basis as to where we are. The midpoint in the year is very important because it gives us an opportunity to talk about trends things that we're seeing and maybe some changes that we may need to recommend and adjustments we may need to make at this particular point in time. So what I'd like to do is just go through a brief summary of some of the major funds. Obviously, you have the full report from the Administrative Services Director, and then we'll both be available for questions. Starting with the general fund, actually, it is a little bit brighter than the original budget had shown. And at this point, if things work according to original budget assumptions, we're going to project a balanced budget. How does this happen? Well, in one way, our general fund revenues are slightly higher than anticipated. In saying that, I would also like to call to your attention that actually, secure property tax is a bit different. It's still lower than anticipated, but on the other hand, sales tax appears to be ticking upward. Both the sales tax, our regular sales tax, and our half-cent sales tax look like they're going to see slight increases. Cumulatively, this is going to mean about $64,000. In between those two areas. Overall, we're projecting at this point that our revenues will be up $104,183. This is in contrast to actually under expenditures. We're expecting to be underspent by $432,600. A large part of that actually is due to personnel reductions. And the ongoing hiring freeze. The city currently has 55 full-time employees. Since the freeze on hiring was implemented approximately 2 years ago, eight positions remain vacant. These include three within police patrol, two in public works, two in community development, and one in parks and recreation. So consequently, as I've noted, as long as our revenue assumptions and the trends continue as is, we believe that we'll be balanced and we'll actually avoid using reserve funds. This is dependent also on the sale of city-owned property, which staff notes that we still need to come back and deal with the council, make a presentation to the council on those options. Relative to the general fund, we're recommending, however, that $14,000 be transferred to subsidize the special events fund. Draw your attention to the fact the city began using this special events fund as a way to track all of the revenue expenditures associated with special events. These are operated by Parks and Recreation Department, and the intent is to try to the degree that we can to make them self-sufficient. At the end of last year, that fund was in a deficit by $14,000, so we're requesting the transfer to make that whole. I did make a presentation to the Parks and Recreation Commission on Thursday night and reviewed this issue with them, and they've agreed to schedule a Parks and Recreation Commission workshop meeting to look at special events, its self-sufficiency, and how they might be able to deal with that. Wastewater Enterprise Fund. The Wastewater Enterprise Fund remains balanced with revenues exceeding expenditures through the end of the fiscal year. Staff is, however, recommending the council authorize a transfer of $60,967 from the sewer fund to the 4th Street project, and that's really because the retention payment actually occurred in this fiscal year versus last fiscal year. So that's to correct that problem. The water again, and also a $60,000 credit we received from Lake Lopez when we received their January invoice. The good news about all of that is that when we did phase the water rates. At one time, we had talked about using water conservation funds to fill in the spaces until we brought the revenue up. We haven't had to do that yet. And at this particular point in time, it looks like at the end of the fiscal year, we'll actually have a cash balance in the water fund of $35,000. That's not tremendous, but at least it's a start. Relative to the improvement agency, staff is recommending that some changes occur in the redevelopment agency budget. It's primarily changes that reflect some under expenditures in this area, but also reflecting what we think we need to ensure we get the council's direction accomplished. One of those things I wanted to call out is we had actually budgeted the West Grand Avenue master plan to be done in 2 years, half of this year and half of next year in terms of the dollar amount, but obviously that's all been done this year, so consequently you won't see that expenditure next year. We'd just be bringing those dollars forward. Also important, we think, is that we retain a consultant to assist with the implementing zone changes associated with the West Grand Avenue plan. We can obviously do those ourselves, but they'll take a very, very long time to do. As has been pointed out, it's important to do those zone changes as quickly as possible and bring them up to date. The other thing that we think the consultant will assist us with is beginning to get some help, assistance on making modifications to the use tables. And the use tables have been very problematic, and this will help with that as well. Also, as noted, I'm recommending that we cover the full cost of the agency's analysis, fiscal analysis, that would include what would be necessary to position ourselves for a potential bond issue, since should the council want to move in that direction. The way that this will happen is we will report back to you probably in the next month as to the results of the first phase of the fiscal analysis, which will document the date, identify the revenue that we have still available, and then we'll provide you with that analysis and ask for direction as to whether the how the council wishes to proceed with that bond issue. So consequently, the changes that we're suggesting is that the council adopt the resolution subsidizing funds from the general fund to the special project fund in the amount of $14,000, and also making the transfer in the sewer fund. Additionally, you would be adopting an agency board resolution that would appropriate $55,300 to the agency fund to deal with the changes we've outlined in the report. That concludes my staff report. Both myself and Administrative Services Director Chapman are available to answer questions.
Okay. I was just wondering if she had a presentation, but you're just answering questions.
Right.
Very good. Any questions of staff? Let me look to my right first.
No? No, thank you.
Okay. Left?
One.
Okay. Councilman Pugh.
I notice under fiscal impacts, it's mentioned appropriations to the improvement agency would be increased by $55,300. And my only question is, if we're pushing money over to the improvement agency, is there a risk that we're going to lose it to a state grab or to the state decimation of the redevelopment agency?
This would be documented as a part of the debt process, so I don't think we would lose it from that perspective.
Thank you.
It would be budgeted, and a budgeted obligation is something that they'll have to deal with.
And I had one other question.
No, good point. Actually, I was going to add on to that, but go ahead and answer
that. Well, my next question was, my first knee-jerk reaction was, I don't want to go out and spend money with a consultant. And the question that follows up with that is, Can you give us a little more clarification as to why our staff don't have the time to make those zoning changes?
Well, right now what you've got is you've got your community development revenue plan and is most familiar with the area that we're going to be dealing with in terms of making those subsequent zone changes.
Okay. And I was going to add on, because I think, Debbie, you raise a really good point. In looking at the full cost of an agency analysis for a potential mm-hmm. bond issue, I'm sure having someone on doing that is a budgeted obligation. However, I think the end goal really is to see if there is a way to generate additional revenues that will go to specific to projects, which hopefully would protect those funds. So how does this align with the timing of a potential state legislative vote on the governor's budget, which does have the RDA takes in it still?
You know, we'll do this as quickly as we can. Obviously, we don't know the bottom line exactly when the proposal will be voted on. It may be in late March sometime. We're getting different information and conflicting information about that all the time, unfortunately.
Okay. And then just two other things. On page two, there was a discussion regarding electricity costs, in particular the retrofit improvements, and you make a point that say we are achieving lower utility costs, which is good. But then you also point out that street lights and park lighting was not included in the retrofit work. So I guess the question is there an opportunity, and how would we retrofit street lights and parking lighting? Is that something that staff has discussed?
Only briefly. Okay. That a program could be developed primarily to retrofit the street lights. We've had some discussions about that, to go to LED lighting mm-hmm. Of some sort, and that could probably save significantly. We would have to identify a source of funding to do that work.
And that's something you've had discussing with Pacific West?
I think only briefly, not anything in terms of detail.
Okay. I would suggest you talk to the experts at some point. So, the last thing I wanted to ask is thank you for putting tracking special events. I think it's really good that we really have a good sense of mm-hmm. what the taxpayers are subsidizing. And clearly, these continue to underperform, and trying to figure out if they can ever become self-sufficient, or if that just continues to be a council policy, understanding
right.
that we're going to be subsidizing special events. But I'm just wondering, has staff had a discussion on that regarding how much longer, I don't know if there's a norm that we need to take a look and track these and say, hey, okay, you're doing these difficult economic times. Is it something we need to consider changing the policy?
What we do is we allow the Parks and Rec Commission to hold their workshop, see what they come up with. But I do think by the time we get into actual budget revision discussions later this spring, the council may have to take a very strong look at that policy again.
Okay, and then my desire, I would hope that in your discussion with Park and Recs Commission and the staff, that they really, and I know everyone's doing a great job of watching expenditures. I think that's mm-hmm. that's illustrated in this mid-year report. But I can't help but wonder, I know that Mina Vaughn, may she rest in peace, had contributed $10,000 to that department, and I understand her foundation has come back with some additional dollars. Is anyone looking at, is there a way to leverage those monies to help out with these budgets?
Well, especially that could be something that, I'll make sure gets reviewed with the Parks and Rec Commission.
Okay, that's good. I know everyone's working really hard to deliver the product and to deliver customer service, but we will be faced with some very tough choices if the economy continues on this very slow recovery.
Okay. That's all the questions and with a little bit of comment sprinkled in there.
Can I say something?
Yes, Councilmember Board Member Monar.
Not to cause a problem, but I do. I personally have a problem with the consultant based upon what I saw. And I just wonder if that's the best way to go.
Staff's opinion remains as it is. Certainly, it's a council decision. Ultimately, for us, though, the consultant was selected through a bona fide competitive process.
Appropriate an additional $55,300, and I guess under that action is where we would have some discussion regarding the question of the consultant. Is that correct? In that.
It can be done either way. My other suggestion would be that you do the budget amendment at this particular time and that we can return to with you as soon as we get the proposal from Lisa Weiss, and you can make a decision regarding that at that point if you so desire.
Okay. So then, City Attorney, I know we've typically asked you this question in the past. Is it best if we take these actions separately or combined?
Chair, board members, I think it would be best to take them separately at this point in time.
I would agree.
I have one comment.
Sure.
I think we also need to keep in mind, I am not a big fan of hiring consultants every time we turn around or every time we think we need some help. But I think our staff has done a great job in getting by with a number of vacancies in the different departments. We've got, about 8 people short? We've got, 8 allocated positions that remain vacant. And I think our staff's doing a great job, and I don't begrudge them the opportunity to have a consultant. If we want to get the work done and we want to get it done promptly, I think we need to use consultants from time to time.
I'd support that with one more fact, and that is that they're being furloughed, I believe, 13 days. So not only are there 8 less of them, they've got 13 days less a year to do the job.
That's true.
And they're still getting it done.
Yeah.
So we're saving a significant amount there. And our number one and number two priorities are economic development. And bringing in this, our beachfront lodge is critical to continued business improvement in Grover Beach. So I think that we would be voting against our own priorities if we didn't provide enable our community development director to do his job, which is get that beachfront lodge in.
That, then I'm ready to make a motion that we adopt the resolution amending the annual appropriation resolution to subsidize $14,000 from the general fund to the special event fund and $60,957 from the sewer fund to the South 4th Street Capital Improvement Project.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Okay. And I will also move that the agency board adopt the resolution amending the annual appropriation resolution to appropriate an additional $55,300 to the agency fund.
I'll second that.
Okay. Motion, and there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay.
Where are we?
So that concludes the joint City Council and Improvement Agency meeting. And so I'm going to adjourn that meeting, and then I'm going to reconvene the City Council meeting on February 22nd, 2011, and where we left off was just before council committee reports. So let me start to my left. Councilmember Monar, you have anything you want to report this evening?
No, I haven't.
Very good. Councilmember Peterson.
I'm going to defer for tonight and bring you back a bigger report on the Visitor Convention Bureau next meeting.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
I will give you a brief comment on Sanitation District. We have a pending request from the Transitional Mental Health for a reduction or a waiver of connection fees. They're remodeling an existing home to create 5 studio units that they will use that will allow them to provide facilities for the psychiatrically disabled adults, seniors, and youth. We have a problem. We have an ordinance that was written quite some time ago that we are struggling with. It does state how our criteria that we have to have in order to do this reduction, and that it's not involving the arts, nor is it involving recreation, and those are the two criteria. We're working on trying to get around that if we possibly can. We also have to keep in mind that our revenue on connections has gone back in, 2005 and 2006. Our revenue from connections was about $430,000. Most recent connection, $67,000 for the fiscal year 9 through 10. So we have a problem in funds, and yet we have these people that want...
I've made some very serious claims, and I know that I'm going to be very careful how I approach this subject, because clearly that's a South Sanitation District authority, but we are a member of that agency, and I think my desire would be to have a much more thorough report at a future meeting. You know, maybe you can work with John and put together a response to them. I know that this is not typically something we'd be looking for, because we typically don't want to try and create a record, but I think there's been a lot of folks who have made claims, and there's a substantial amount of concern that we really need to kind of get a little bit more information on that. Does that sound like something we can work on?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Councilmember Wright.
Thank you. At the Air Pollution Control District, the county and the state are moving forward with the mediation measures to reduce the PM10 issue. They're hoping to, as I said before, to get some actual projects, sample projects, for lack of a better word, on the ground here very soon. And as well as the APCD staff is working on a fugitive dust rule that's going to kind of give the perimeters as to how all of that's going to really actually end up. So stay tuned. It's going to get more and more interesting. And then EVC, they had the solar companies that are the projects out in Carissa Plains, right? No, where are we? Anyway, the solar projects out in California Valley. Thank you.
Yeah, Carrizo Plains. I'm sorry.
See, past 9:30 and I'm done. Presentations were very informative, a lot of positive reaction from the EVC board, and I guess that, again, is the story that will be told as we go along. I know the Planning Commission is still looking at it, so... That's about it for me.
Very good. So, Karen, on the APCD, so obviously they're moving. Is the county and the state moving forward on putting in, I guess, some fencing and whatnot for dust control? Is that kind of where they are?
Well, they haven't actually come forward with any specific measures at this point in time. I know that those are typical measures that have been used in other areas where they have PM10 problems. Okay. But to date, we haven't had any specific measures.
So that's something that sounds like the state and county has to discuss what the mitigation are and when to implement that.
And some people are asking for more studies to determine just exactly where these types of things would be placed and so on. And so it's just a whole myriad of things that are, I guess, that will really determine that.
And did anyone come to the APC board? I know the state looks like they wanted to do some of their own monitoring out there, and it sounds like it was they've got to go through a process to get a permit from the county, and I know that's going to be highly politicized. Has anyone brought that issue up to your board?
No, the major issue was Not that so much, other than people feeling that, you know, that study should stand because that's what was accepted and so on.
Okay.
The original study, or phase two study, I guess it is. But there was some concern about the TAC committee mm-hmm. that was formed as a result of this MOA.
Okay.
And whether or not it was actually a public agency meeting and so on and so on. So that was brought to the attention of our board. However, as it turns out, really the TAC had pretty much done their duty, so that was simply dissolved, and so they're just going forward without that type of a committee.
Great. Yeah, definitely keep us informed, and keep doing a good job.
And I'm not chair anymore, thanks.
You're not chair anymore, and you now have an alternate, so.
Exactly.
You have reinforcement. I don't have anything to report. I think the Council of Governments and the Regional Transit Authority, I had given you a report last time. We haven't had a meeting since then, and the same thing for South County Area Transit. And then earlier, we talked a little bit about the Five Cities Fire Joint Powers Authority. The only thing I will add under that category, and I guess there's been some discussion about the mechanics of how this all will work out in the end, and it appears that maybe the
and Muni Services develop a list for us of businesses that we would target through our marketing efforts. It's a critical piece, and it's not a piece that I think any of us really have the expertise to develop, but those two parties do, and along with that, I'd ask them not to just give us a list at their earliest possible convenience, but also to give us not a list of customers and a list of the media and press that they read.
You know,
we want our target audience. Who are they, and how do we get to them? And I think that would be providing a huge service to us if they could just sit down together and pull that list together so that we know then whose door to be knocking on and mm-hmm. through what vehicle we do that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good suggestion.
I do too.
Okay. And I have to admit, there's a magazine out there called Wired magazine, and I had learned several months ago that there was an article that talked about the high-speed internet and and it was really targeted to the folks down in Southern California and said, how do you get onto the information superhighway? And they talked about starting in L.A. and then followed the cable, and they came to a little sleepy town called Grover Beach. And so after that article, I thought, I'm going to subscribe to that publication. I'm way in over my head, though. But, yes, I agree, Debbie. I think we're all in agreement. Any other communications?
I have one.
Okay, Councilmember Monar.
Tomorrow I'm going to go to a presentation for the companies that are going to be putting in the anaerobic facility at the landfill. They're having a reception at 4:30, and after that a presentation. So I will be attending that and giving you some information.
Good.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. And then, not to beat the dead horse, but I'm wondering why, City Manager, you mentioned we have two part-time people, right? That work for Public Works? Is that what you said?
Actually, it's for planning.
No. They're not part-time people. They're they're spread. The way they're spread between different departments, it's only half-time that they're dedicated to actually planning responsibilities.
Okay, because I was just wondering why if you had people that were not working full-time, why we couldn't pay them to do the work, you know, having to do with the zoning, and give somebody else, you know, a better salary. Okay.
Well, and let me just add to that, as a recovering planner, someone who's done Bruce's job, I'm just going to be blunt. We don't have staff expertise to do that. I think Bob was generous in saying I think Bruce could do it if he had the time, but it's not just the lodge. It's potentially Cuesta College. It's this affordable housing project. So it's taken me a while to understand that he's got limitations and he only has so much time. And so I'm not averse to using consultants because it allows us to not only add staff but add experience
Right.
They come in, they do a job, they're done, and then we're not having to pay employee benefits, medical, and retirement. So, and I understand we've the rub in using consultants, and I know that we've had a few people on the council who've expressed those concerns, and I respect that view. So, I think the only communication I had, I wanted to ask a question because it just dawned on me that I believe Digital West recently made a presentation to the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. Bob, what was that, a week or two ago?
Actually, 2 weeks ago.
And that was all about, they had asked many businesses in the county to identify what things they felt they needed to improve business. And a large percentage of them said access to broadband, mm-hmm. which is what we've been trying to accomplish with the Municipal Network Project. And so the question that I have to either one of our EVC reps is, have we made a presentation to the EVC on our technology master plan so that people are fully aware of what Grover Beach is doing? Because if the EVC is really saying we're looking at the economy in a regional manner and creating diversity, Grover Beach could be the key to not just Grover but to this region, and trying to get them on board to say, hey, Grover Beach is doing these things down here around broadband expansion and access. They need to get behind us instead of trying to compete with us. So, you know, I don't know if we haven't done that. Maybe that's something our EVC reps might talk with Manchek and see if there's an opportunity to make that presentation.
Well, I won't speak for Mike, but and also I'm now the alternate, so Debbie will be the mouthpiece. However, I truly believe that they would welcome that mm-hmm. sort of presentation.
Okay.
And I'm meeting with them tomorrow.
There you go.
So I'll just ask that question.
Very good.
Perfect.
Okay. So